This week we've got Larry O'Connor from Otherworld Computing and the winners from our Casemate contest from last week. My Mac Podcast number 182.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And as I said, we do have Larry O'Connor coming up a little bit later in the show, but first we've got Guy Searle from Virginia with us. Hello, Guy.
Hey there, Tim.
We've also got David Cohen is back after a couple weeks of vacation. Hello, David.
Hi there. Did you miss me?
We did miss you, as a matter of fact. Well, Guy did. He was sobbing uncontrollably before and after each show. And
Tim had to talk me down a few times.
A couple times. He was on the ledge. He was on the ledge. Wait, he's okay now, we think, so... But joining us also this week is Rich Lefko of MyMac Magazine. Hello, Rich.
Hello, Tim. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you on. It's been a while since you've been on the show. I think before Macworld Expo, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
I think it was. I remember driving up to the Apple Store in Ann Arbor, Michigan, going to buy Leopard, and I was listening to the show from the week before that we had recorded, and you were on that show. But I don't know if you were on any after that, so it's definitely been a while.
No, it was the weeping from not going to Macworld.
Yeah, you know, Macworld, do you have any plans on ever attending a Macworld in San Francisco, or is it just like one of those things that you just can't really fit into your schedule?
I would love to be able to do that, but, you know, winter is a tough time to get away from New Hampshire. So, but I plan on it. It's one of the things I want to do in life.
Well, they're a lot of fun. I think you'd really enjoy yourself. And, of course, a whole bunch of the MyMackers would be there as well. So we'd love to have you whenever you can make it. Kind of a fun week in the Mac world, I think. Not a whole lot of news per se, but we do have a new iMac.
A couple of them. Yep, 3.06 Core 2 Duo. Still no Core 2 Quads.
No, I think those probably run a little bit hot at this point to fit into an all-in-one computer like the iMac. But mm-hmm. I did see the bench scores for that new 3.0 machine, and it's pretty fast.
Yes, it is impressive.
And a much better graphic card in it.
It's really interesting. I think that, you know, I mean, the quad is, I would suspect they want to keep away from the quad to avoid blurring the line between that and the pros. But really, in terms of the performance you get out of these machines nowadays, it's hard to imagine many tasks where you would need more computing performance than that.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's amazing that the speed is now equal to what was a Mac Pro model. Well, not a Pro, but, you know, like a G5 model back then.
Oh,
yeah.
Easy.
In fact, the one I've got sitting on my desk, it's a 2. I don't know, something. It was the top of the line one a week ago.
But it's until
it's a 2.8 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo.
Yeah, it's the extreme model.
Right, that's pretty much faster than any. Yeah, for the most part. Yeah,
faster than any G5 that was made.
I would think. Not necessarily in probably hard drive access speeds or memory, but for every day.
Processing. Yeah.
My current MacBook that I'm using as my main machine for most things runs rings around my old dual processor G5 for anything I want to do on it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, really. Obviously, unless you're doing something with graphics, where obviously the MacBook's graphics are a bit weaker. But certainly anything CPU related, like encoding video or encoding MP3s, it's probably twice as fast as the old G5 was.
Wow, that's significant.
I would agree with that. My G5 is the same. Yeah.
So
I absolutely agree with that.
So anybody know anything else going on in the Mac world this week? I saw that the Systar. Some of their machines are out in the wild, Guy.
Yeah, and let's see. I think it's some guy in California, and I can hear the fans from here in Virginia.
Yeah, it's pretty loud from the videos that I saw online. I don't think that's anything that I would necessarily want in my house.
No. No, it certainly wouldn't work well doing a podcast, that's for sure.
No. No,
but it would help you clean up the office.
Well, yeah. All the dust would be in the computer, that's for sure.
Exactly.
It sounds to me like the Mac OS is not talking to the fan controllers on the motherboard. as it would in an iMac or a Mac Pro or even laptops, that it controls and it regulates the speed of those fans depending on the heat of the computer itself.
And I have a suspicion that if you look at the cost of those machines and then you consider the amount of manual labor that they have to put into each one to get OS X onto them, they're going to have to cut the actual hardware prices to the bone to make any money. If they've got an engineer working for a few hours on each machine before it goes out. So I suspect they've got really bottom-end components in there in terms of the motherboards and the power supplies and what have you. So that's probably another factor that drives up that fan noise.
I think.
Yeah, for people that are interested, there's a there's an article on Engadget that's comparing computational benchmarks against a 2.5 MacBook, MacBook Pro, iMac, and the new 3 gigahertz Core 2 model. And SciStar's numbers they don't look too bad. They compare rather well under most conditions with the Macs themselves. I think for anyone who's interested in this kind of computer, there's a couple things you have to remember. Is that there's no guarantee that when Apple comes out with 10.5.3, not even talking about 10.6, that you may not be able to update the computer until the OS X86 project manages to hack their way around it. And if SciStar starts selling some significant numbers of machines, Apple will most likely do something to break OS X86's compatibility.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be too difficult for Apple to make it on button possible for this company to succeed. Or do you think I'm wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I think they've pretty much ignored the whole OS X86 crowd just because
they would be a no-win situation.
I don't want to call them a nuisance so much, but it was insignificant to the number of people that were buying Macs as compared to those that were kind of building their own and using OS X86's little tricks to get around the login lock.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but if SciStar and other companies start coming out with selling computers including retail copies of OS X, well, Apple's not going to sit still for that. Now, at the same time, you can pretty much, so far, Apple has been remarkably silent on this. And I don't think publicly. And I think most people thought that, the moment that SciStar announced it, SciStar certainly did, that, the Apple lawyers would be surrounding their facility, with drooling, drool coming down out of their mouths.
The SWAT team is showing up, yeah.
Yeah, the iSWAT team.
What do you think, Rich? Do you think this is a product that's going to stick around for a while, or do you think that Apple's going to squash them pretty quickly?
I look at it as speedy crap.
that's an apt description.
Yeah, it's not a bad analogy.
It ain't pretty.
No, it's definitely not pretty, and it's definitely not elegant in any fashion.
And it's really loud, too!
What? I can't hear you over my SciStar vacuum cleaner. There was, and I don't remember where I saw it. Some developer had posted a video of a prank that his office mates had performed on him. And it was, he was trying to quiet the office, and he had one of the original Intel machines from Apple before they were actually available to the public. So it was for the developers, right? And he wanted to know how loud it was, but he wasn't in the office. So he had someone record it, and they had this little video camera, and they show him turn it on, and it's just extremely loud. And he has a fit. He's like, oh, my God, we can't have that in the office. I mean, that's incredibly loud. We'll never get any work done with that thing. That's crazy. And then they sent him another video where, sure enough, they show him going over towards the power button, and you hit it, and you hear it starting up, and it sounds like a vacuum cleaner. It's so loud. And then the camera pans backwards, and you see a guy with a vacuum cleaner vacuuming the floor. I thought that was great. I thought, wow. But the funny thing was, watching that, kind of a joke video, the sound sounded exactly like the SciStar video. I mean, it was... Wow, that thing is loud. I don't want one.
The thing is, I've had some PCs over the years that that were pretty loud.
I've had some Macs that were loud over the years. I had a G4 that was extremely loud. Russ Walkowicz had that mirrored Mac. It was a G4.
That was a loud one, yeah.
And they called it the wind tunnel. I mean,
it even had like those four big round holes on the bottom of the front.
Right. Well, when the nickname is wind tunnel, that's not a term of endearment.
No.
That's not a good thing, I would think.
It doesn't compel you to want to own one.
No, well, I still wanted one, but yeah. I didn't want to have to build a soundproof enclosure for it.
The thing is with this, what gets me about the SciStar machines, and you know, listening to the podcast and you guys talk about this the last 2 weeks has been infuriating because I've really wanted to get into the conversation. But what gets me really about a machine like that is that you have none of the advantages that I think that having a Mac gives you. You're not getting good design.
No.
You're not getting good hardware.
No.
You're not getting a rock solid system because it's been hacked to hell to get the thing to work. You're not getting any support at all. You can't take it into an Apple store and discuss anything with a genius. Yeah, you're not guaranteed even that any other software that would normally run on a Mac will work on this thing. You know, you might install, I don't know, Photoshop CS3, and it might just not like the hardware and not work. So effectively, you're in the same situation that you would be in if you went out and bought a beige Windows box.
Yep, exactly. You know,
that's exactly what the Windows world is like.
It's like buying a TV. You don't update and upgrade a TV. And you are not going to update or upgrade this faux Macintosh. You're stuck with as it is forever.
That's right.
And what you get, and that's it.
You've saved a few hundred dollars, but you're not getting that premium Apple experience, the premium Apple service that I would argue is really what Macs are about. I mean, you know, this is the sort of thing that turns you from a computer user into a fanboy or an enthusiast, is the fact that, you know, the computing experiences with a Mac is massively pleasant. You know, it's really enjoyable to use the machines. And you're not getting any of that with this SciStar machine. You're just saving a few hundred dollars. So to me, it just doesn't, you know, I don't see what market they're trying to address with this machine, and I suspect that Apple won't need to sue them. It'll just fade away because I don't think anyone's really going to buy one.
There are times where it's hard to quantify what being a Macintosh fan is all about and explaining what the appeal to the Apple machines are, even at a higher price. I think, though, that the SciStar clone really shows us why we go with Apple and why not anybody can make a Macintosh. No, well, do you agree?
There's another issue about the SciStar machine is that if you have a hard drive failure, you can't just pop in another drive and reload your operating system.
You can't even put the CD in.
And Leopard
will not boot that machine.
No.
The DVD will not. So if you have any kind of a problem, you literally, according to the company's own website, have to send that machine back to them to fix.
They've kind of retouched on that, and what they're saying now is just send us the drive and you know, we'll send you a new one.
Yeah, but, in other words, I'll send you the one thing that's in this machine that has any value, which is all my data. Okay, yeah, let me just send you that with all my pictures, with all my financial information in Quicken, and you know, all that information, all the caches, all my porn, all everything that's on my drive, I'm just going to send to you.
And what address do you want me to send that to, since it changes every other day?
Well, yeah, exactly.
They actually have a physical facility now. And you know.
So I would really like to know the excuse at this point on what was the deal with that initially. Why was there three different addresses? Okay, now that these machines are in the wild and everyone can deconstruct them and actually look and see what they're made of and realize that this is probably not a solution for anybody that would really want one of these, except for maybe a hardcore Mac guy who really is into building his own box and doesn't really care about, you know, forward mobility with it as far as upgrades. Why would you buy this? Why would anybody buy this?
Real geeky, cheap guy wants to mess around with this thing. I can't imagine this falling into the mainstream.
But you can already do that.
Yeah, you can, but you know, they put it all together for you. I mean, you don't have to get all the parts.
Exactly. But then the really geeky guy is not going to want it, because the really geeky guy is going to already know about the software that allow you to hack a PC and put the macOS on it, and they're already doing that.
Well, I think, well, one, I think in what, SciStar's I think in SciStar's defense, and you know, let's make sure that we're balanced with this discussion here. I think from my own experiences, when I've tried to do any sort of hacking work or do anything that's near the edge, and I'm thinking about the iPhone here, people say, oh, you can just go to the web and find out how to do this stuff yourself. It's actually quite difficult, not because the information isn't there, but because the guys who do the hacking and then write the hacking up in a wiki and that sort of thing, they tend to use, you know, a type
different
of language. Yeah, they use a language and a level of detail that is not accessible unless you live in that world. And it can be very difficult to, when you're reading stuff, to understand whether it's current, whether it's actually been moved on, whether the guy who's writing it actually knows what he's talking about, or whether he's cribbed it from somewhere else. So actually, it's not a straightforward task to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to go OSX, I'm going to build a PC myself and go OSX 86, try and get it working. It's not as easy as that. Yeah, and so you know, I think SciStar in their approach, I think it's laudable in that they're trying to, you know, say, well here's an opportunity to look at all of that without having to get into that world, and I think that's the market they're trying to serve. I would also say, obviously, none of us have actually seen these machines. We've just seen a couple of videos. I would invite them, you know, if they do want to really go somewhere with this, is get in touch. Let's have a talk about what it is. Let's have a talk about what they can do, and you know, let's see if maybe we can see one of the machines, and then we can take it forward from there.
Well, I can say that we have approached them. I actually talked to them on the phone last week, or was that the week before? Whatever
it was.
Last
week.
Yeah.
And nothing's come out of it yet, so we'll see. We do need to take a break here in a second so we can get to All Over the Mac with John Nemirovsky. He's got an interview this week with a lady named Julia Arabas? A-R-A-B-A-S. Arabas. Arabas? How do you pronounce that? I'm going to say Arabas.
Throat Wobbler Mangrove.
Yeah, there you go. But first, before we do that, one last thing in the, I guess we're going to call this the news section, is that Apple is going to have movies for sale in iTunes day for day on DVD releases. And you can also buy them on the Apple TV. What do you guys think?
Really?
I thought
that the studios were pretty much putting like a 2 to 4 week delay.
It wasn't the studios that was enforcing that, Guy. It was really the Walmarts and the Target that wanted some kind of an advantage.
I'm not a buyer, but I think it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea as well.
I actually set up my new Apple TV last night.
We'll talk about that here in the next segment after we talk with Larry and we hear from John. I definitely want to get to that, and we'll get to our contest winners. But do you think that Apple moving into the number one spot in music sales, do you think that had anything to do with putting pressure on the movie industry to get their content out there as quickly as possible?
I don't know really, but it would be interesting to see whether, in fact, you know, the Apple TV with the revised software now is moving in bigger numbers than it has in the past, and the studios have moved away from their ambivalent approach, which was, you know, let's stick a toe in the water here and see how it goes, and are realizing that if they're not careful, they'll actually lose their opportunity to make money off digital downloads. So I think
Apple's doing it right.
Well, I mean, certainly my experience, you know, having not used an Apple TV before, is I'm absolutely bowled over by it. I think it's an absolutely fantastic product. Funnily enough, when I first went onto the iTunes store and you know, was looking at the movies and I saw you could buy them, I assumed you could always do that directly from the Apple TV. And then I was surprised to read today that, in fact, that was something that's only just come in the last day or so. So I'm really stoked by it because it's, as an Apple TV owner, I think it's great for me.
What about you, Rich?
Well, frankly, I think it's movie studio greed playing on it. I think they want to try and capitalize any way they can to make an extra buck on this stuff. And if they can get it out sooner and it doesn't cannibalize their DVD sales, then why not? I can make this extra couple of bucks this way.
Actually, I think they'd probably make more money on a digital download at the same price than they would a physical DVD, don't you agree? There's distribution or media or printing or
no boxes, shipping.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And also you don't have to, you know, eat the cost of all the ones that don't sell.
Exactly.
I'd be hard pressed to think that they were trying to do us a favor.
Well, we'll be right back. First, we're going to listen to All Over the Mac with John Nemirovsky. Then we're going to jump to our interview that was actually conducted earlier with Larry O'Connor. That was with Rich and David. And then we'll come back here to wrap up the show. We're going to talk about David's new Apple TV and our contest winners, and we'll be right back.
We recently met a mother who's a university professor. Now we get to meet the daughter. Hello, young lady. What's your name?
Julia Erebus.
And what town do you live in?
Salem, Oregon.
And how old are you?
9.
What sort of computer do you use?
iMac.
What color is it?
White.
Is it big or little?
Big.
And what about iPod? Do you have one of those?
Of course.
What color is that?
White.
Is it big or little?
In the middle.
In the middle. Very good. What sort of music do you listen to on your iPod?
I listen to rock, soothing music. I listen to all kinds of music.
Who are some of your favorite artists?
I really like the Brady Bunch, Hannah Montana, and that's all I remember.
Do you have to get your songs off of iTunes, or do you get some help with that?
I get some help with that.
Who helps you with your iTunes?
My mom.
Is she cooperative, or is she difficult to work with?
She's cooperative.
Very good. Let's hear about your iMac. Is it all your own?
No.
Who do you share it with?
My family.
What sort of stuff do you do on the iMac?
I play games.
What sorts of games?
I play American Girl Doll and sometimes Barbie and PBS Kids and stuff like that.
And are these games that you can just use anytime you want, or do you need to have some supervision from an adult?
I have to have permission, but then I can just go on it, and I don't really have to have an adult watching.
Do you have to mind the clock so you know how long you've been on, so you're not on there 10 or 12 hours straight?
Yeah.
Otherwise, would you be on there 10 or 12 hours straight?
Yeah.
What about the internet? What sort of stuff do you do on the internet?
I write stories, write songs.
And where do you put them?
Well, I print them out, and then my band and I sing them.
How many people are in your band?
3.
Who are the other people?
Michaela, she is 12. Karina, she is 7.
And what sort of instruments do you have in your band?
We have I think a flute, some kind of flute. I play the piano, and we have a singer.
Sounds like a great group. And you said you use the internet to make these songs?
Yep.
What does the internet have to do with making songs?
We don't like to write, so we just type in a song and print them out.
I see.
Easier.
Songs from the internet?
No, sometimes we make them up, and sometimes we get them off the internet. My favorite song, personally, is Hey Little Sis, Hey Little Bro.
Say that a little slower.
Hey Little Sis, Hey Little Bro.
And who makes that song?
Michaela.
She made it up?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Oh, can you sing a little bit of it for us so we can know how it goes?
Okay. Hey Little Sis, Hey Little Bro, sorry, sorry, sorry. Hey Little Sis, Hey Little Bro, sorry, sorry, sorry. Sorry that you can't run like me, sorry that you can't run like me. But when you get old and grow up, you'll be like me.
Michaela composed that whole song?
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics and the music?
Yeah.
Have you done any composition yourself?
What do you mean?
Create a song from scratch with lyrics and music?
Sort of. I did part of a song.
Do you use the computer in the creating of the song?
Yeah.
In what way?
I get half of a song on the computer and make up the other half.
And what advice do you have for other kids who want to be in a band or want to do some music? How can they get started?
Just make lots of friends and get them all together and get instruments and just get into it.
That's great. What other stuff do you do on the computer?
I play lots of games and...
Tell us about the rice. We heard about the rice earlier.
Oh, yeah. I have to do, before I play any games, 5 rice.
And how does the rice work?
Well, if you get 100 grains of rice, it has free rice to 1 homeless family. And so it's just really cool.
But do you take the rice to them? Do you deliver the rice to them? How do you know they get it?
Because there is like a bowl on the computer.
A what?
A bowl.
A bowl.
Yeah, it is. And whenever you get a word right, it it 10 of 20 grains of rice goes in, and then it says, I think it says sending over in the right-hand corner on the top, mm-hmm. and then it goes, the bowl goes into a small and goes on the side, and if you get 10 of those bowls, it feeds 10 homeless families.
That's wonderful. Do you do that every day?
No.
Do you use computers at your school?
Sometimes. We go on Read About.
And are they Macintosh or Windows?
I don't really know.
But they're not iMacs?
No.
Okay, I think they're probably Windows.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your comments. Anything you'd like to say either to parents or kids to help them understand how to use the computer a little bit better?
Parents, I think that you should go on the computer with your kid and help them find an appropriate thing, well, game, and have them play it.
Do you know any kids who do any virtual worlds?
Yes. Her name is Rebecca. She has two virtual worlds. It's called Webkinz and Barbie.com.
And have you been over to her house while she's working on it?
I think so.
Are they interesting or not that much to you?
I don't really care about them.
So you think the parents should really participate at the computer with the kids?
Yeah.
What else should the parents know while their kids are at the computer?
Check on them every 15 minutes.
So they don't get into mischief?
Yeah.
And what should the parents do if the kids do get into mischief?
Probably not let them, when they ask next time, can I play on the computer, say no.
Well, thank you for coming on our podcast. We can't wait to hear you on the air.
You're welcome.
Bye, Julia.
Bye.
And we're back, joined this time by David Cohen. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for sticking around for the next segment. Rich, hello.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for having you come on the show. I really appreciate your time. Of course, you were on a little earlier in the show, but thanks for sticking around. And we're chatting right now with Larry O'Connor. He is the founder of Otherworld Computing. They've got a lot of my money over the years. And hello, Larry.
How are you doing? Glad to be here, Tim.
You know, I've been wanting to chat with you for a long time. I think I met you for the first time at this last Macworld Expo. But it's kind of funny because we've had a relationship with Otherworld Computing for a number of years. You guys have been an advertiser in the past. We've reviewed a whole lot of your products. John Nemirovsky during the Macworld Expo this year actually had a floor chat with you on the expo floor. So we've kind of always been around each other, but we've never had you on the podcast proper. So I thought right now is probably a really good time to take advantage of the fact that it's kind of the slow season right now and get you in and chat with you for a little bit.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely. I have certainly enjoyed the coverage and the friendship of your site. So it's a real honor and opportunity to be on your show.
So when did Otherworld Computing get started, and how did it get started?
Oh, wow. I got to go into this story. Wow. All
right. Well, there was this mafia guy.
Yeah. No, not quite like that. But no, it's hard to believe it's already been 20 years since this company was started, almost 20 years. October of 1988, this company got off the ground providing some local computer-related services. And then in 89, I started selling memory. It was all started with memory, and then it went out into hard drives, but actually started on America Online. And then from there, continued to expand the service and of course, the team, which is the most important element of this organization, to grow it to what it is today.
Did you ever foresee getting this to this point? Even back in 88, did you think you would be as large as you are?
Well, quite frankly, in 88, I was, that I say, just going into high school, so I had, I hadn't quite put the long-term picture together. At that point in time, it was almost in protest of what other companies were doing in the memory market that I started selling memory. I mean, it was just highway robbery.
Absolutely.
It was a great opportunity. It was a great opportunity for us to, even back then, I'd say we and us, even though it was just, it was we and us was I. But nonetheless, it was a really good opportunity to provide a fair price on good product to people who, quite frankly, were just getting, in my humble opinion, were being ripped off. I felt like I was being ripped off, and it's like, you know, I have a way to put a stop to this.
So you got started on America Online?
Yes, sir. They had a at that time, they had a section called the Mall Classifieds. It wasn't overused. In fact, you could put an ad up there. It was free with your account. You could put an ad on the Mall Classifieds that would typically stay on the front page where you could see about 10 listings. They were line listings. You'd click on them, you'd open them up, and you could see more information. But an ad would last about a week on the front page before you had to repost, and you know, just started advertising there, and you know, shortly thereafter began taking ads out in some of the small ads at that time and some of the different Apple publications, and it just kind of grew from there.
But the name
Online,
was the was it I named Otherworld Computing then, or did you that come later?
I didn't adopt the name Otherworld Computing until 1994. It was kind of a, I guess you could say, a brainstorming session, and you know, from that, moved away from the more generic and much smaller scoped. Well, I believe I started as LRO Enterprises and moved the company, into Otherworld Computing with obviously the intention of having more than just a couple people and an online ad.
Rich, did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the name. So it's interesting that it wasn't always known as Otherworld Computing. And what was the name before that, you said?
Otherworld Computer Sales was its, I'd say, the last incarnation before Otherworld Computing.
And how quickly did you move sort of expand your product line from just memory into other products for Macintoshes?
Well, I'll tell you, by 1992, the company went from just selling memory to selling hard drives, external floppy. At that point, you had floppy drives. I mean, a wider range of accessories. But it was 1993 that we really, really went full bore into hard drives. A company, and I can't quite remember the name of the company offhand, but a hard drive manufacturer had gone out of business, and we made a deal to take a container of their external enclosures, which was actually a really nice external enclosure. It happened to look just like an Apple 3.5-inch floppy drive. Stacked really nice with 3.5-inch floppy drives, which pretty much everybody had back in that day. And that's, obviously, how we got off the ground and started putting hard drives out the door.
Wasn't there a website called Mac CPU that you had something to do with at the time? Or did you...
Mac CPU was a competitor.
Okay. I thought somebody bought them at one point and because they just basically disappeared.
Yeah, the guy, I believe, got involved in the mining industry with gold. I want to say, I mean, that was you know, those, they, you know, I don't recall their names, but I do remember them both. It was a husband and wife team, and, you know, they were good people. They definitely were characters, that's for sure.
Well, they kind of pioneered the whole online business that blogs, this was even before blogs was a term. They were writing articles on their website, the same website that they were selling products, which was kind of different at the time. So I just have a very vague memory of them. I mean, obviously they're long gone, but they seem to be a very nice couple. Here's a question for you, Larry. I get a lot of email from the listeners of this show and obviously even more people who read the website asking me quite often, where would you buy a hard drive or where would you buy RAM? Who's a reputable dealer, Tim? And you guys are one of the – probably the first one that I usually mention. Oh, you know, go to Otherworld Computing or MacSales.com. They have a lot of nice stuff and really good prices. But one of the things that they always ask is, what's their reputation? But they never ask me that about Otherworld Computing. It seems to me that Otherworld Computing has this very good reputation, and I never get questions about that, whereas I do with some of the other advertisers we've had in the past and the companies that we've reviewed products. How did you cultivate that great reputation that Otherworld Computing has?
Well, I'll tell you, it's something that's certainly not happened overnight, but you know, vision-wise, I mean, we've always been a full-service operation, and they, quite frankly, the hardest challenge there is bringing a sales force and customer service force and tech support team. You know, at this point, we have over 100 employees at this company, which is pretty hard to believe. You know, I go back, you know, 20 years or even 15 years, but you know, having said that, is making sure that every team member, you know, understands, you know, I say what we're here to do. I mean, bottom line is we're here for our customer. And that's an attitude and a philosophy and just a mentality that we work very hard to instill in, you know, every new recruit, every new you know, team member that comes on, you know, on board with Otherworld Computing. And if I go back in time, you know, Otherworld Computing, the name actually kind of was derived from, you know, giving people, you know, and well, just quite play in the words here, but an other choice, you know, different from what was out there. And back in the, you know, the early 90s, you know, I tell you, you know, as a somebody who, you know, at that point, I still bought, there was other computer stuff I, you know, my company didn't have access to that we still called up places, you know, to try to buy. And I tell you, you know, the majority of the computer companies, you know, back in that day that we would, that I would call, you know, if you weren't ready to buy something, they, you know, worked as fast as they could to get you off the phone. They didn't just outright hang up on you. If they thought you
were going to buy something. Yeah, I remember that.
And you know, if Larry, they thought you were going to buy something, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
You know, Larry, the one of the things I like best about, and I, like Tim, I've dropped a lot of money at OWC as well. One of the things I like best is the product lineup and the items that you have, and the enclosures that you offer and the solutions that you guys offer. How do you come up with some of these products? You guys got a team that works on there. Since you bought the newer tech name, I've noticed that there's a lot of products on that side as well. You know, how do you guys come up with some of the products that you offer?
Well, we have a full product development team and testing team, and you know, we don't just bring stuff in that we throw our label on. I mean, there's a lot of R&D and a lot of, how to say, I'll be very honest with you. Currently, it was pretty light on the engineering that's actually done in house, but the R&D, the testing, the specification, and the research in terms of, you know, which chipsets, et cetera, you know, go into a product. You know, we spend a lot of time on that, and ultimately, you know, no different than you. You know, we want to have a product that's not going to provide, you know, issues. We want a product that when we ship it, you know, works reliably for our customer. So as far as those ideas, I mean, maybe I give too much credit. I don't think I give too much credit. You know, we really take what I consider to be a very common sense approach. You know, if I go back in time, you know, I just have, you know, recollections of experiences where as soon as the wallet was, you know, heard to be cracked open, you know, XYZ companies always seem to want to see how much more they could sell you, see what they could sell you into, you know, and not based on what you needed, but based on, well, what they either had a bigger commission on or a bigger dollar tag attached to. You know, our philosophy in terms of all the upgrades and products that we offer is to provide our customers with what they need. And if the customer's not sure what they need, we try to take all the information available to provide the best recommendation that suits that need. You know, if somebody doesn't need, you know, a certain feature, a certain, you know, product, you know, level, you know, we try to match a product that's going to best suit. Memory, I think, is actually kind of an interesting example that comes up recently. You know, a lot of people, and our recommendation is a little bit contrary to that thinking, but a lot of people think when they go to buy memory, they should, I may as well buy the next speed up so that if I upgrade in the future, I can move my memory from that machine to the next machine, just as an example. Or, you know, even if you look at a hard drive, I mean, somebody needs a 250 gig drive today, it's always good to buy. I mean, hard drives are cheap. It's a hard example. But I guess the bottom line is you're better off buying within reason. I mean, and with a buffer for future expandability, but buying really what's spec for your system today and what you need today, because, you know, most of this stuff doesn't get more expensive as time goes on. And when it comes to memory, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about moving the memory, you know, away from one machine to their next system, but the vast majority of the time when you buy a new system, that memory stays where it was. It's not worth the trouble to move it. And besides that, if you pull the memory out, either it hurts its resale value, or if you're going to continue using it, you're going to be killing its performance. You know, it's a good intention, but the reality is, you know, time value of money, you know, save the dollars today because you can, you know, they'll be better spent tomorrow.
You know, I noticed during the Macworld Expo, go ahead.
I was going to say,
We're not looking, when we get a customer on the phone or on our website, you know, the goal is to sell them what they need because we certainly hope they have the opportunity to provide that service the next time they need something else. And it's not a matter of, again, this goes back more to the 90s. I'll just never forget. I mean, the majority of those kind of, it's a turn and burn philosophy that just, you know, once the customer is gone, you know, they're on to the next customer and they hope they got every last penny they could because there's no long-term thinking. You know, this organization is definitely built, you know, on a long-term basis. You know, it's not what we can, you know, for it. It's quite frankly making sure that our customers get what they need, and we're here to support that sale, you know, afterwards as well. That includes, you know, make sure they get the support for the product they purchase as well.
Go ahead, Rich.
I was gonna say, I'm always amazed at how quickly OWC comes up with their memory upgrades immediately after a new Mac is put on the market. Sometimes I hear about the new Macs when the OWC press release comes out saying there's new memory available.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. You guys are really on the ball with upgrades for brand new computers, Larry. How does that work? How are you guys so proactive?
Well, the Apple Developer Program certainly helps, and the other aspect is we're very Mac focused. So, when we have expectations for a new system, for example, the Mac Pros, we knew the specification of the processors is pretty straightforward, right? For the most part, in terms of what the memory bus, everything else that will be spec'd around it, it's not necessarily a big secret. And we take a position to make sure we have that product built and ready. In fact, at Macworld, we had planned to be in a position to introduce our Mac Pro 800 megahertz memory at the show. It was a big old shocker because we already had product on the line being built. In fact, we started shipping the Thursday after Apple did their introduction at the CES. But the bottom line was, we were preparing to have that product ready for the show. It was kind of a shocker that they kicked it out a week early. But this is what we do. I mean, Macintosh is our specialty, so it would be a big surprise for us if we weren't able to, be on the ball. We also work with at this point, we're not a broker of memory. Memory products are built to our specification on lines we contract, and that gives significant control over both the quality of the components and the individual components going into the builds, as well as, all the sourcing, all the specifications, all pretty much everything that goes into making sure that, we're prepared for a new model to come out. We don't have to wait for somebody to build it and say it works, because we're already providing those specs. We're the ones kicking that over.
I had a MyMac staff member at the Macworld Expo comment to me in the press room. He came up to me and he said, "Did you go by the Otherworld Computing booth?" And I said, "Sure." And he says, "Wow, they're so busy over there, and they're actually installing into the computer right there, right at the table. If you buy memory from them, they will install it right there for you." And I said, that's pretty cool. How do you guys get to the point where you could actually install memory for someone at the Macworld Expo and at the same time selling? And I'm watching you guys sell a lot of stuff during the expo on the showroom floor. How do you guys coordinate all that?
That's a function of good management. I say our team has got it down to a science. I mean, we've been doing these shows for 8 years, and I think it's that we have a real good core group that goes out every year, and definitely have gotten to the groove with that. And quite frankly, I think is a key factor. The people doing the installations, well, it's mainly Jamie Dresser, our product manager, does for the most part all the different installations out there. He enjoys it. Everybody who works for this organization, by and large, they enjoy what they do, and that's very important to us, and that's very important for our ability to, again, provide that best level of service to our customer. And I tell you, when you talk about memory, a lot of people still aren't comfortable putting memory in these machines, even though it's straight up easy install. So it's really a win-win. We get to help some people out with their upgrades, plus passerbys get to see the process and really how easy it is. And we try to do the same with online videos that we put up online for free as well. Across the board, it's not just selling the product, it's also kind of an educational process. Because from our perspective, the more a customer knows, that the better that customer is going to be able to be, and the more they will be able to get out of their Macintosh computing experience.
What's the demographic of your average customer? If you would have to quantify them, what's the average customer like?
In terms of which aspect?
Mom and pop type of buyer, corporate buyer, expert, average user, that sort of thing.
I have to say it goes across the entire gamut. I mean, everywhere from government. In fact, we ship product. It's kind of neat when we get to ship product down to NASA or Army Research Labs. I mean, that's fun stuff. And we have our everyday customer that buys a stick of memory. And quite frankly, the service approach to that is you know, pretty well identical. I mean, it's not, you know, if you have a question, a concern, a call, you know, if they need help with installation, it doesn't matter what you purchase or how much you purchase. I mean, our team is here for you. But the demographic, I mean, it's very broad.
You guys have just moved into a gigantic new green facility up there in Illinois. How long was that in the planning phase? And I think it took you guys about a year to finally wrap it up and get in there. Based on the emails I was getting from Eileen.
It was about a three-year project from the start, you know, when we started looking for land and started, you know, the initial planning. The actual design started in May of 2006. You know, construction started and ground was broken in early 2007, roughly February. February, the first ground was broken, and the building really started in June. So this building just finally got wrapped up. I shouldn't say finally. The project itself finally got wrapped up here a couple months ago. And, you know, there's still a couple little minor details being worked on. They still got landscaping and things to do outside. But, we're excited as heck to be in this facility and, you know, in a place where we're not crawling over each other.
How big is it compared to the old place?
Now, the old place was about 10,000, maybe 11,000 square feet, and then we had an office for our accounting and our design group across town, and then we next door leased about 6,000 square feet of additional warehouse space with a couple offices, you know, for additional a few additional personnel. And this facility is 37,000 square feet, all under a single roof, which, again, a significant jump plus, you know, key. You know, this is the first time in 4 years that our entire team is back under one roof again. And that's priceless.
Yeah, that has to help tremendously.
Before we let you go, Larry, I usually ask most of our guests this. I'm going to combine two questions in one. What was your first Macintosh, and what was your favorite Macintosh of all time?
My first Macintosh was a Mac 2SI. In fact, it's quite frankly what got me into Macintosh, even though I was selling some stuff that worked on the Macs. I was originally an Apple II, I won't say fanatic, but was an Apple II fan. Actually, I had an Apple II GS that I enjoyed a great deal and got a 2SI when they had that great old bundle deal with a laser printer and a display. And I have to say, I'm glad I got it because I got it because I needed to do my own ads. I was tired of paying somebody to, you know, do the little print ads and decided I could do it myself. And it was a good step into the Mac environment. Had I not gotten that computer, I don't know if Otherworld would have, you know, stayed in the Apple course because I was very bitter about what they had done to the Apple IIgs in 90 and 92. But having said that.
So that's the one that got you into it. Is that your favorite?
You know, if I had to think about my favorite Mac, it would have to be it'd have to go back to, if not the good old beige G3, it'd have to be, and that's part of that has to do with the hours that I spent personally modifying little ZIF CPUs for fixed clock speed and acceleration.
Those beige G3s were a nightmare to work on.
They were fun. They had they came with a personality card, and they definitely had personality.
I think before we leave you, I think David Cohen had a question for you.
Larry, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about the Axitron modbook that you resell. You're the exclusive supplier for it, and obviously you've helped bring to market a product which a lot of Mac fans have been hoping Apple would produce for a long time, which is a tablet Mac. I mean, how is that machine going, and how well has it been received?
Well, I should clarify that we're not, as I say, reselling, actually a resale. We actually do the final assembly and conversion at our facility.
Right.
So we're reselling the complete solutions, but it's really an integration project. But having said that, at this point, it's going great. I mean, there are some bumps in the supply line earlier this year and certainly before this year, but Axiotron, in my humble opinion, has put out a very quality product. They definitely didn't cut any corners. They took their time. You know, they've worked very well with us in terms of overall quality control concerns and refinements to allow us to deliver what is a rock-solid product. You know, they did not rush it out the door, and it's definitely reflected in, you know, what we're shipping. As far as reception, the product is doing, you know, very well. You know, and from our standpoint, best of all, we're only right now a couple weeks from being fully caught up on it. You know,
Wow.
If I go back 2 months, we had orders that were – You know, well, we had orders that were pretty close to being even up to a year plus old.
Wow. Yeah.
Roughly 2 to 3 weeks. We've got a full crew at this point now ramped up, and we're roughly 2 to 3 weeks from being on a same day, well, a one, I should say, a 1 to 2 day turn basis. An order placed it within 2 or 3 weeks, say within a day of placing order, we'll be able to ship out your custom mod book as configured.
So right.
It's coming right along, and we see the light in the tunnel. I hate that.
Yeah, has Apple commented to you at all about the product?
Apple, how do I say, has more of a direct commentary line with Accutron, who's the developer of the mod book.
Right.
Having said that, Apple did engage Accutron into their custom products, you know, support division, or support authorization last year to, you know, to facilitate and help, you know, see that product come through. So yeah. If Apple was negative towards it, they certainly would not have made it. Well, again, last year, you know, when this product was, you know, brought into the Apple program, they were able to call this an Apple authorized, or I should rather say, an Apple approved modification. So
yeah.
Apple definitely, if anything, there it's a good watch and see for them. But it's a pretty small niche, and I think it's one that Apple. I'd like to think it's one that Apple is glad to see a Macintosh product available in.
Yeah, well, it's great. You know, really great product.
Larry, any plans for a MacBook newer tech battery? I've sent you about 14
emails. The short answer is yes. The long answer is that product has been in development now for well over a year. You know, there's already companies I'm aware of that have these cells, I should say these batteries out there, but we're not just taking what, you know, we found to be, well, quite frankly, leftovers from what goes into Apple's production and throwing, you know, our own pack around it and putting our label on it. You know, we're building a proper cell from scratch that, you know, we expect to be better than Apple's battery, certainly if not in capacity, because it's a space issue more than it is anything else, but definitely in longevity. And that's not to say that Apple's battery isn't a good battery. You know, we just have the ability, or at least I should clarify, the opportunity in a smaller run scenario with a little bit different specifications, since we don't have to produce a zillion of them a quarter, you know, to produce a more refined product.
Well, the last batteries that you sold for PowerBooks and those usually had a higher capacity, which is, you know, what I was thinking you would have for a MacBook battery.
We're working on it. There may be, how to say, I mean, and please don't hold me to it, but, you know, there's probably, physical space to support maybe an extra 5 to 10%. But it's really a physical. I mean, there's every last bit of space is being used for the cell packs. The real focus on our product is making sure that it has better longevity. You know, the number one complaint out there is what the battery is doing is 6 months or 12 months, you know, after you've purchased it, after you've been using it. You know, we want a battery. We want to provide our customers with a battery that you're not looking to replace again in, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Any idea what we might see?
Is there anything? Go ahead, Rich.
Any idea where we might see it?
I would love to put a date on it, but at this point, our engineers continue to give me dates that slide by with one reason or another.
So it'll be ready when it's done.
It'll be ready when it's done,
yeah.
And it will be a product that was worth the wait.
Is there anything about Otherworld Computing that our listeners may not know about, but you think they would find interesting?
That's a hard question to put our finger on. That should be an easy one for me to answer, but there's, you know, a lot. I don't even know where to start there. I think everything about this company is interesting. But
well, it's crazy that you guys have such a stellar reputation in a time that a lot of companies don't. You keep saying that Otherworld Computing subscribes to a common sense approach to business. That's almost an that doesn't seem to be the way that most companies, it seems to me, are run nowadays. Common sense doesn't seem to prevail, and yet you guys are using that approach, and it's working really well for you.
Well, again, to me, it only makes sense, so it's hard to. In some respects, it's a disappointment that that's outside the norm. You know, without any question, you know, we're all human. But, you know, one thing, you know, for sure, you know, given the opportunity, you know, this entire team, this organization is here, You know, this, I mean, we're here because of our customers, and you know, I personally make myself available. I mean, whether it be you know, firing an email in or posting on a forum, I certainly you know, email probably gets the best and quickest response. But you know, I'm here to make sure. I mean, that every customer is happy with their customer. I mean, happy with our company. I don't sleep all night if you know even one customer you know has a concern. You know, that's for sure. And you know, one other I guess interesting comment comes just when I talk about back orders. You know, we hate back orders. I mean, our you know, goal here is number one to prevent you know customers having to experience back orders, and you know, number two is to insulate customers from all this fun stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Years ago, it's amazing you know, how much you know, there's a lot that goes on before a product you know, gets from I'd say is able to ship from OWC out to a customer. And you know, one thing you know that you know we really you know work hard to is you know it's not about you know why something didn't happen. It ultimately is our, you know, we make the commitment and it's our responsibility to fulfill that commitment. And everything that goes on behind the scenes, you know, our number one goal is to insulate our customers from that because at the end of the day, I mean, that's, you know, the service that they're looking for. They're looking, you know, if you need a product, that's, you know, what the issues are with the supplier, this, that, whatever else, you know, that's not something you want to be concerned with and that's not, you know, something that we, you know, want to be putting out there as far as, you know, at the end of the day, it's a matter of, you know, we do everything we have to do to make sure that your expectation of us is something that we're able to fulfill. And that, again, I go back as common sense. I mean, we provide honest information and every once in a while it, you know, we get, you know, how to say kind of a blindsided and ATI is one of those companies that sometimes provides very long ETAs that continue to slide. And you know, it's a position we hate to be in because we hate to have to tell our customer that we can't fulfill, an order on the original timescale that was committed. So, again, common sense, I suppose.
Larry O'Connor is the founder of Otherworld Computing. You can go to otherworldcomputing.com or macsales.com or simply go to this show's show notes at mymac.com and find a link directly to their site. Thank you very much for being on the show this week, Larry.
Hey, my pleasure. And hey, thanks, everybody. There, Rich, good talking to you. And Tim, nice thank you very time. Much.
And thanks. And again, we want to thank Larry O'Connor for coming on the show and recording that segment with us. And David, you were there for that segment, but Guy, you weren't. Do you have any experience working with Otherworld Computing?
Yeah, Otherworld Computing was kind enough to send me a dual 1.4 gigahertz upgrade for my old 933 G4 tower. Uh-huh. And they were very patient in waiting for that.
You were a little late on it.
I was a little bit late on it. I had a lot going on at the time. You know, I had some. You know, my son had some problems. He was in the hospital quite a few times. I was delighted with the performance of it. And really, anyone who has an old G4 tower, if you want, and you know, I talked about this in the review that I was almost sorry that I bought the 2.16 gigahertz iMac that I'm currently using, and that I hadn't gone with a processor upgrade for the G4 because everything I was doing as far as, you know, the stuff on my computer, it would have been fine and I would have saved about over $1,000.
You know, upgrading an older machine is definitely an option for a lot of people, especially if you have a second computer you would like to repurpose. I know you did something like that, David.
Well, I did, and I was just about to say, I'm actually looking at a similar upgrade module from PowerMax, I think, at the moment, and
they make good processors.
You know, if you're on a budget or you're going to college and you want to have a Mac, you know, you've got an iPod or something like that, and you really want to have a Mac rather than a PC. One of the cheapest ways of getting a good performing Mac that will run all the latest software is to go onto eBay, pick yourself up a bargain basement blue and white G3 or the first generation of the G4 towers, the silver ones. You can get a 400 megahertz machine like that for literally probably around $50. It'll cost you more to ship it if it's not local than what you'll actually pay for it. Get one of those. You spend a bit of money putting RAM into it, putting a new hard drive into it, and putting one of these processor upgrades, and you will have a really, really nice Mac.
Absolutely.
Provided you're not, you know, editing the next Jurassic Park movie or something like that, it will do everything you want to do. You know, you'll have a nice machine that will last you all the way through your college course or whatever you want to do, or a small business. It will really set you up, and you won't be looking to upgrade that for a good period of time. And yeah, it's a very, very cost-effective way to get into a Mac. And of course, you know, those bigger machines are much more flexible than something like a Mac Mini in terms of if you want to put extra hard drives, you want to put a DVD burner or a Blu-ray drive as they come out, that sort of thing. You can just bang that straight in there, and it'll work.
Well, as long as it has an ATA interface.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but all the GeForce,
all the GeForce did.
Yeah, all the GeForce.
Other than the very first G4 did not have an ATA controller. Yeah.
And but if you, I mean, if you want to put SATA drives in, then you just put a slot, a SATA card in the slot, and you're away.
And you know, one other benefit if you're a college student is if you get an old Mac and set it up like what we're talking about, it will much less likely to be stolen than, say, an iMac or a Mac Mini or something along those lines. Because the thing, I mean, I have one. The thing is a beast. It's big, it's heavy, it's bulky, and it's obviously, just from the looks of it, not the latest and greatest. So, you know, if some potential thief comes into your room, looks at it and says, that's an old Mac. I don't want that piece of crap. When in the meantime, he doesn't realize you've got a 1.2 gigahertz G4 upgrade in there from somebody like Newer Technology or OWC.
Yeah.
Let's move along a little bit. At the beginning of the show, in the first segment, David, we talked about that you were on vacation. And I know one of the things that you picked up when you were here in the States was an Apple TV. It sounded like you're very pleased with it so far.
I'm really, really pleased with it. I used it to replace I had an iHome, which was from Elgato that I used previously to allow me to watch video from my Macs on the TV. And the iHome basically was just like a streamer. It would allow you to stream video out of iTunes to an analog TV.
Didn't you have to have iTunes running?
No, you had to have the iHome client running on the Mac, but it was, you know, very lightweight and just sat there in the background. The problem with the iHome is it wouldn't run H.264. It was a good solution in its day, but compared to an Apple TV, it was a little bit clunky. And obviously you always had to have a Mac on so you could stream from it.
Sure.
I've replaced that with the Apple TV and I'm very, very pleased. I bought a refurb 160 gig unit from Apple. It's slotted straight under my TV. I switched to a high def panel, LCD panel TV about 6 months ago. So I just plugged it straight in with an HDMI cable. The picture quality is phenomenal. It works really well over my internet connection. I've got stuff loaded on the Apple TV itself. I've got stuff streaming from other Macs in the house when I want to. And the online experience with the Take-Two software is fantastic. It really is.
I never had any experience with the first software with the Apple TV, because as soon as I plugged in my Apple II or my Apple TV, it updated to the new version and it was off and running.
Yeah.
But I have to agree with you. So far, I am super pleased with it. You know what I found interesting is that I did get, you know, the top of the line model. What is that? The
160 gig.
Yeah. 160 gig drive.
And I have it filled up, but I didn't put a lot of the shows that I've actually been watching lately, such as The Sopranos. I decided to go back and rewatch the entire series as, you know, time permitting. That's actually on my Macintosh, on an external drive on my Macintosh, on an external FireWire drive. And it's streaming it over the time capsule. That's the latest and greatest, 1 terabyte, blah, 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 blah. Streaming it to the Apple TV, which, granted, is only, you know, 12 feet away. But it doesn't hiccup. I can fast forward, rewind, real time. It's not even on that hard drive. Of course, I do have to have the Mac and that drive turned on. But nonetheless, on the hard drive.
Don't you also have to have iTunes running?
Well, sure, but usually if my Mac is on, iTunes is running anyway.
Yeah, right.
The only time iTunes is not running on my machine, Guy, is when we're recording the podcast.
That's the only time.
Yeah. Because, you know, I find it interesting how much of our digital life now, and you're really going to start noticing this, David, with the Apple TV, is how much of our digital life revolves around iTunes now.
Yeah.
Your phone, if you have an iPhone. Your iPod or iTouch, like Chad Perry has the iPod Touch. If you have the Apple TV, everything is starting to revolve around iTunes.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think that's kind of a scary thing? Because if this one application has a major hiccup, of our content is there. And we're in trouble.
Yeah, and we've been through that. I mean, I remember, I think it was iTunes version 6 was a little bit ropey for a while. It was a bit buggy, and it got quite frustrating. But having said that, the iTunes store is pretty solid, and you know, the way Apple wants to move is allowing direct access from other devices rather than just iTunes running on a Mac to the iTunes store, and that's what we're seeing now with the latest updates to Apple TV. Of course, the iPhone now can also talk directly to the iTunes store if you're on Wi-Fi.
Right.
Clearly they are moving to this this sort of situation where effectively all of this stuff will kind of sit together and work and interoperate, and it won't necessarily matter exactly how you're accessing the content, but it's all coming together around the content. And I think the announcements that have just been made about DVDs and digital downloads being issued at the same time, that's also demonstrating that things are moving that way, that the content is going to be there when you want it and you're just going to click a button on your device and go and get it.
Guy, do you trust Apple with being the gatekeepers of all this content now?
Well, you know, yeah, I do, and I'll tell you why. Is that as far as the content goes, Apple doesn't care. Apple doesn't care where you get your content. That's why, even though they have an 80+% market share with the digital players, nobody can sue them for being a monopoly, because they have done nothing to prevent competition as far as digital content goes. They're there to sell hardware. Apple wants to sell you hardware. So iTunes,
and they want you to maintain that collection though with their software,
right?
Not just their hardware.
So it's in Apple's best vested interest to make sure that iTunes, and whether it's on, you know, I know that there's been some grumblings on the Windows side about iTunes, but to make it the best experience that they possibly can, no matter what platform you're on. Well, either, you know, Windows or the Mac, of course. So, yeah, I think Apple will continue to improve iTunes. I think that, you know, before, you know, we're getting to the point now where I think that they've got a lot of stuff, you know, in the pipes for iTunes that they haven't released yet, because they haven't tested it fully with all the different stuff that can connect up through it. So, yeah, I trust Apple, at least in this particular case, to do the right thing as far as iTunes goes.
I do, too. It's you know, Apple is providing an end-to-end solution.
Boy, don't we sound like a bunch of fanboys.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. Apple is providing the end-to-end solution, but I think so far they've been pretty trustworthy gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Don't you agree, David?
I think so. I think most, you know, 9 times out of 10, they try very much to be fair. I appreciate the fact that they've stuck to consistent pricing in the iTunes store. And let's face it, you know, the only people who's been fighting on the consumer's behalf with the content providers to avoid us being robbed blind have been Apple. You know,
at least publicly.
Yeah. Well, you know, but they've been making statements that support the user's point of view. Now they've got a vested interest in doing that because they want the users to be on their side to continue to support their business model.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is that everybody else, you look at what Microsoft did with the Zune and what Napster and Rhapsody and everyone else have done, is they've turned to the content providers and said, tell us what you want and we'll give it to you. And Apple has turned around and said, this is what we think our users want, and so this is what you can have. And I think that's a good approach from the consumer's point of view. Now,
it's kind of like what Larry was talking about earlier on the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's the customers.
That's right.
It's a common sense approach, and Apple seems to be doing that as far as the whole digital lifestyle goes with music and movies and podcasts. And a lot of people forget that Apple has become the default gateway for podcasting.
Yeah.
Not just our show, but every show. I can pretty much guarantee you that everybody listening to this right now got our show through a subscription in iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not everybody. And there's going to be some people that are listening to it on the website.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of them are getting it through iTunes. And Apple has been, quite honestly, very nice gatekeepers. They don't have to allow our show on their service. They don't have to do that.
And one of the first things I tried when I got the Apple TV going was to go into some of my favorite video podcasts and looking at those on it. Now, I have some of those downloaded to my computer because I watch them on my iPhone. But I noticed that some of them had high definition fees, and I thought, well, there's a high definition device. I've got a high def TV. Let's see what the high def fees look like. And I was able from the Apple TV to go straight to those podcasts through the iTunes store and stream them over the web to the Apple TV. Didn't have to subscribe to them or anything.
Yeah.
And you know,
well, that's what I was talking about on the show, that it's going to change the way you view podcasts, and especially the video podcast more than the audio. Because you don't have to subscribe. You don't have to make that commitment. I'm going to click this button, and every couple days or every week, a new show is going to download and take up valuable space in my hard drive. It's like watching TV. You click watch now, and it just streams right to
you. That's right. And you know what? It was an amazing experience. The videos, high-def video through the Apple TV. I know it's purists will argue it's not true high-def, or it's not as high-def as it could be. But
it looks good.
It looks fantastic. And
I was watching screencasts. What was his name?
Don McAllister.
Don McAllister. I was watching that, and... It looked great. I watched Mac Break. That looked great. Yeah. So the people that are doing it right, that have invested in quality, really makes a difference. Yeah. And the Apple TV bringing it to your living room, at least for me, David, wow, it's made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, my wife is a big fan of American TV, and she's already saying, you know, well, some of these shows that I like to watch, you know, can we get them? I mean, with us just being there for 2 weeks, she'd been watching a few shows, and she said, oh, can I get this show and that show, and can I get it on this? And I said, yeah, we can just go and buy a season pass, and it'll come down. That really, really impressed device. It's one of those devices, a bit like the MacBook Air, where a lot of people, I think, who don't have one or haven't tried one have said, don't see the point of it. Sounds like it's too many compromises to me. Oh, it doesn't, it doesn't have this feature, it doesn't have that feature, it doesn't have a tuner, it doesn't have a DVR. And it's one of those things when you actually have one and you set it up and all of a sudden it makes sense. It just
works. Absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah. And I think Apple, it would not surprise me if over the next year to 18 months you see Apple come out with a panel TV with Apple TV built in, and I think that's really where they'll probably be going, and then they'll start moving into the consumer electronics space somewhat. And I think that would be a fascinating combination if they did that.
Well, they did drop the computer out of their name. It is Apple Incorporated. Now, I still call it Apple Computer a whole lot of the times because, you know, 30 years of experience will do that.
Yeah.
Let's move on a little bit. We do have a little bit of business to take care of. First, I do want to mention, I got a couple products in the mail this week with everything else that's going on in my personal life. It was kind of neat to get something in that I can just kind of enjoy. A couple of things. First, I have been playing with the Flips. I talked about that for the last month or so. I started doing my video review of it this week.
How are you finding it?
Today, as a matter of fact. Oh, it's a fabulous little product. It really is kind of neat.
I bought one of those while I was away as well and used it for my all my vacation video. And I was really, really impressed with it. I think it's really good.
I would say it's basically VHS type of quality of video. But it looks good. It sounds good. It's small, compact. It transfers the files effortlessly to your Mac.
Yeah.
It's a little product that works that I'm very impressed with.
The thing is, the quality might not be, you know, it's not HD or anything.
It's not high def.
No, it's not at all. But the point is, what I found is that it was so easy just to slip it in my pocket wherever I went, and I could, you know, literally within 3 seconds of deciding I want to shoot this on video, have it out and shoot the video. And to me, I was thinking, if you can shoot video whenever you just think about it, then even if it's lower quality, at least you have it on video. Whereas if you have a tape camera or an HD camera, then you're probably not going to have it with you because, you know, you don't want to carry something that big around with you. So to me, that is the beauty of the device. And you know,
I wish that Apple would put a video camera in the iPhone after using the Flip.
Yeah.
Because that would completely replace, if the quality of the Apple TV, or I'm sorry, the iPhone video was as good as the Flip, just that good, I'd be more than happy. And knowing Apple, they'd probably built in some kind of a H.264 encoding, a better lens than what currently ships with the iPhone. I think that would take the iPhone to the next level. Yeah. I mean, it would be just simply fantastic. Yeah. But the other product I got in, I get companies that send me products a lot of the time unsolicited. But this company actually asked, sent me an email asking about, hey, how do we submit a product for review? And I said, well, you know, go to the website. Here's the direct link to our reviews site, and has shipping information and what we require. And, you know, if you want it shipped back to you, you have to provide blah, 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 all that information. And the company is called Lap Logic. You can find them at laplogic.com. And they sent me these. It's basically you put it in your lap and you put your laptop on top of it. So it's like a lap desk. And they sent me two of them. And the thing about these are they're filled with aerogel. Have you seen those aerogel websites? It's this material that's like paper thin, very lightweight, but yet it doesn't transfer heat.
I've heard of it, but I've never actually seen it.
No. You should, if you Google it or go up to Wikipedia, there's some really interesting information. Now, I don't know if the aerogel that they're using in these is the real aerogel that I see all these, because that stuff is really expensive. And these laptop desks are not very expensive. Let me see what the pricing is. $60 or so for the wide one. And the wide one basically comes with enough space to put your laptop and then a space for your mouse. You can actually use a mouse with this little lap desk. Cool. And the other one is just the size, the one that I've only used so far is just the size for, I use it for with my 15-inch MacBook Pro. And it's, I don't want to say it's light as a feather or anything like that. There's a little heft to it. But man, it really does work. My laptop does not slip at all while it's sitting on this thing. I mean, it's very secure. It's got like a little pocket in it where you can put like a disc or whatever in there. It's a neat product. I'm really, really impressed with it. Now, obviously, I'm going to have to use it for a couple weeks before I'm able to do a proper review of it. But so far, so good. I'm quite impressed with it. It's really a neat product. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, and this is going to segue into our contest winners, is Casemate sent me a collection of their Croc embossed leather cases for the iPhone. They sent me a, what color? They sent me a silver, a black, a brown, and a green color for the iPhone. And these are nice cases. I know Sam was talking about these, Sam Levin on Cool Mac Picks. We were expecting Sam tonight. I don't know what happened. He might have been called away. Steve Jobs, you know, sent for him. And they're nice cases. They come with the plastic screen protector for the front of the iPhone. They look kind of basic, but then when you start using it, people comment on it. My wife actually looked at it. She hates the color green, by the way. But she said, oh, that's kind of neat. And it's the green one. I said, oh, you actually like that? She goes, yeah, it really makes the phone stand out. So I showed her the silver one. She didn't like the silver one too much, and I don't either. But, you know, different tastes for different folks. The black one, you almost can't tell that it's that faux croc thing because it's just black.
Yeah.
But I really like the brown one. I think the brown one really stands out. But before we wrap up the show, and we have to do that really quickly here, we did have a contest thanks to Sam Levin and Cool Mac Picks last week. And I said, send in your contest entries, and I will pick a winner by random. What I did, I just put them in a database and did it that way. I actually have a little script that a listener a long time ago sent us that will go to the email and just pull them randomly. So it was pretty easy to pick the two winners this week. The neat thing was that Casemate said that you get to pick your prize. That's very, very cool. We want to thank Casemate. Yeah. It's Case-Mate, Case-Mate. We do got two.com. We do have two winners. The first winner wanted the black carbon fiber leather iPod touch case. So an iPod touch user, the black carbon fiber leather. I looked at that. That looks pretty cool on their website.
Yeah.
The winner's name is Dean White out of Delmar, Delaware. So congratulations, Dean. We're going to send you contact information over to Casemate so they can get your prize out to you.
Yeah, that's
the other winner. I don't know the product he wants. I know the product, but I don't know what he wants it for. I don't know if it's for an iPhone or an iPod Touch. He wanted the Naked.
That's the new
Naked
one, isn't
case.
It? That's the brand new
that's
one.
That's the brand new one. And it's really neat looking, too. It basically doesn't look like there's much of a case on there because it's naked. So I don't know if this winner wants the iPod Touch or the iPhone version of it. But the winner is Michael Donis. He's out of East Hampton, Massachusetts. So those are our two winners of the Casemate
two
contest.
Two Northeasters.
Thanks. Yeah, exactly. We did get a couple of Australian contest entries. I didn't specify whether they would send it to Australia or not, but I figured they would because no one told me any different.
Well, you know, Sam sent me, I know he sent some of the other guys too, a Casemate, and it was, I wanted to thank Casemate. It was the perforated black 80 gigabyte iPod Classic case. And this is with,
Pretty nice.
Napa leather. It's got like a metal shell inside that's also covered on the inside, so, you know, you're not going to scratch anything up. This is a substantial product. It looks great, and it's only $30. So thanks, Casemate.
Wow. Definitely, Casemate. They're not sponsoring our show, of course. They're not an advertiser, but they did sponsor the contest, and Sam made them, I think, a couple times now, a cool Mac pick. Yeah. So they're a good company. We've been reviewing their products since they came into existence.
Very wide range of products, and everything they do seems to be quite well thought out, rather than just
very
being,
well,
you know,
put together.
Yeah,
right. They're not just another, oh, they just make
iPod cases, which you can get three.
And they seem to be on the cutting edge. If you go up to the Casemate website, you can actually follow them on Twitter. I mean, not every company is promoting something like the Twitter service. That, hey, look, we're on Twitter. You can follow us there. That's pretty cool.
It is
very forward-thinking company.
Yeah, gotta love the Twitter.
Yeah, now they just absolutely need to send me a signature suit for my 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Now, last two things. Next week, we're supposed to have BJ. BJ is a longtime listener of the show. We met him at the Macworld Expo. Hopefully, he can still be on the show next week. I think it'll be a lot of fun to have BJ here on the show and listening.
And he is a card.
He is he's so funny, and let's not forget, he really does know his Mac stuff. I mean, the reason I came to know him is we were literally chatting back and forth. I think it was during a Apple keynote for the developers conference, and he popped up on my iChat one day, and we just started talking, and we were following the event together, and I thought, oh, this is a really cool guy. I like him a lot.
I follow him on Twitter, and you know, his lifestyle is something else. You know, all he ever seems to do is either be buying a Mac or being Starbucks drinking coffee, or he's in bed. But
parking illegally.
That's right. But he's massively enthusiastic. He's a really, really great guy. Looking forward to speaking to him next week.
I don't know how he can, but he seems to be able to afford all the new Macs when they come out and all the gadgets, Apple releases. He is like the ultimate Mac guy.
He is, yeah.
He really is. In a good way. That's not a negative, by the way. So I'm looking forward to getting him on the show and chatting with him. It should be a lot of fun. And finally, we do want to thank all of our listeners and readers of MyMac.com. I do want to remind everybody listening, we do have a donate button on our website. If you go up to our website, MyMac.com, look on the left-hand, or I'm sorry, on the right-hand side of this page, you'll see a yellow button that says Donate. It's a PayPal account. If you want to donate, we'd appreciate it. Every little bit helps. And beyond that, I want to thank Guy for being on the show this week. Thanks for coming
on,
Guy.
No problem. I love it.
And David, once again, we really did miss you. Not trying to sound sappy or anything. You were missing
three shows, yes. So,
yeah, and it's really odd when you're not here. But I'm glad you're back. You're going to be back for a while, I hope.
Yes, definitely.
For those wondering where Lee Givens is, and I did get an email from him during the show, and it says, we just got the build for AOL Desktop for the Mac from their config management team. It's their Gold Master candidate, and it's hopefully going to be launching tomorrow. And he has to work with the QA to get the final reads and the thumbs up. The only problem is he forgot to bring his USB headset, so he had to miss the show today. But, you know, work comes first, and I'm personally looking forward to seeing what the final version of the AOL Desktop is. AOL is not a sponsor, just like, you know, Casemate isn't. But
they could be.
After Guy and I and who else was there?
It was
Guy,
Owen, wasn't it?
Micro. Owen, yes, Owen and Larry. When we met with AOL, kind of by mistake during the expo after we got done talking with Microsoft and kind of stumbled in there and started chatting with them, I actually kind of got excited about their product again, using AOL for something. And thanks to AOL, I'm back on eBay. I can buy and sell on eBay again. So that's always a nice thing. So anyways, that's the show this week.
A couple of quick things. Number one, there's a new poll up at machippie.com. So if you get a chance, go on over there and vote in the poll. It's another thing on SciStar. And, brain cramp. Chris Siebold's book is now out. I got my copy. I ended up with about 18 pages and a nice little check from O'Reilly.
Awesome. Oh, that's awesome. A nice little check from O'Reilly?
Yeah, looks nice.
And
it wasn't a whole lot of money.
I should have contributed.
and Rich Lefko also had some stuff in there as well, didn't he?
As did Larry.
Yes, he did. Yep.
Yeah.
Larry Grinnell, my brother.
So that's the show this week, and we will be back next week. Thanks for reading My Mac Magazine. Thanks for downloading our podcast. We love your emails. You can send those to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.